Star Tide Rising, Cassette 10.
All subtlety went out of the fight with the coming of dawn. There were no more delicate sonic deceptions, no tasteful taunts. Githajan chased Kipiru with awesome single-mindedness. Exhaustion seemed to hold no meaning to the monster. Blood loss only seemed to feed his rage. Kipiru dodged through the narrow channels, some as shallow as 12 inches, trying to run the wounded pseudo-orca ragged before he himself collapsed. Kipiru no longer thought of getting away. This was a battle that could only end in victory or death. But there seemed no limit to Githajan's stamina. The hunt scream echoed through the shallows. The monster was casting about, a few channels over.
Pilot, why do you fight? You know I have the food chain on my side.
Kipiru blinked. How could Githajan bring religion into this? Prior to Uplift, the concept of the food chain as a mystical hierarchy had been central to cetacean morality, to the temporal portion of the whale dream. Kipiru broadcast omnidirectionally. Githajan, you're insane. Just because Met stuffed your zygote with a few mini-orca genes, that doesn't give you the right to eat anybody. In the old days, humans used to wonder why dolphins and many whales remained friendly to man after experiencing wholesale slaughter at his hands. Humans began to understand a little when they first tried to house orcas and dolphins next to each other at ocean parks, and discovered, to their amazement, that the dolphins would leap over barriers to be with the killer whales, so long as the orcas weren't hungry. In primal, a cetacean did not blame a member of another race for killing him, not when that other race was higher on the food chain. For centuries, cetaceans simply assumed that man was at the topmost rung, and begrudged only the most senseless of his killing sprees. It was a code of honor, which when humans learned about it, made most of them more, not less, ashamed of what had been done. Kipiru slid out into the open channel to change his location, certain that Githajan had taken a fix from that last exchange. There was something familiar about this area. Kipiru couldn't pin it down. Something to the taste of the water. It had the flavor of stale dolphin death. Eating, eaten, biting, bitten, repay the sea, come and feed me. Too close. Githajan's voice was much too near, chanting religious blasphemies. Kipiru headed for a crevice to take cover, and stopped suddenly as the death taste became suddenly overpowering. He nosed in slowly and halted when he saw the skeleton suspended in the weeds.
Hist, he sighed.
The dolphin spacer had been missing since that first day when the wave had stranded Hikahi, and he had behaved like such a fool. The body had been picked clean by scavengers. The cause of death was not apparent.
I know where I am, Kipiru thought.
At that moment, the hunt scream pealed again, close, very close. He whirled and darted back into the channel, saw a flash of movement, and dove out of the way even as a monstrous form plunged past him. He was knocked spinning by a whack from the giant's flukes. Kipiru arched and darted away, though his side hurt as if a rib was broken. He called out, "After me, reverted scoundrel! I know, now it's time to feed you!" Githajan roared in answer and charged after him. A body length ahead, now two, now a half. Kipiru knew he only had moments. The gaping jaws were right behind him. "It's near here," he thought. "It's got to be." Then he saw another crevice and knew. Githajan roared when he saw that Kipiru was trapped against the island. slow, slow, or fast, fast. Time to feed me. Feed me. I'll feed you, Kipiru gasped as he dove into the narrow-walled canyon. On all sides, a dangling weed bobbed as if tugged by the tide. Trapped, trapped, I have you. Kathajan squawked in surprise. Kipiru shot to the surface of the crevice, struggling to reach the top before vines closed in around him. He surfaced and blew, inhaling heavily and clinging close to the wall. Nearby, the water churned and frothed. Kipiru watched and listened in awe as Kathajan struggled alone, without harness or any aid, tearing great ropes of the killer weed with his jaws, thrashing as strand after strand fell over his great body. Kipiru was busy as well. He forced himself to remain calm and use his harness. The strong claws of his Waldo arm snapped the strands that grabbed at him. He recited his multiplication tables in order to stay in Anglic thought patterns, dealing with the vines one at a time. The half-orca's struggle sent geysers of seawater and torn vegetation into the sky. The surface of the water soon became a beaten green and pink froth. The hunt scream filled the cavern with defiance. Minutes passed. The ropes that attempted to seize Kipiru grew fewer and fewer. More and more descended to fall upon the struggling giant. The hunt scream came again, weaker, still defiant, but desperate now. Kipiru watched and listened as the battle began to subside. A strange sadness filled him, as if he almost regretted the end. I told you I would feed you. He sang softly to the dying creature below. But I did not say who I would feed you to. Chapter 75 Hikahi. Since nightfall, she had hunted for the refugees, first slowly and cautiously, then with growing desperation. There came a point when she threw caution away and began broadcasting a sonar beacon for them to home in on. Nothing. There were fen out there, but they ignored her totally. Only after entering the maze did she get a good fix on the sound. Then she realized that one of the fen was desperately crazy, and that both were engaged in ritual combat, closing out all the universe until the battle was over. Of all the things that could have happened, this stunned Hikahi most of all. Ritual combat? Here? What did this have to do with the silence from Streaker? She had an uneasy feeling that this ritual battle was to the death. Hikahi set the sonar on automatic and let the skiff guide itself. She napped, letting one hemisphere and then the other go into alpha state as the little ship slid through the narrow channels, always headed northeastward. She snapped out of a snooze to the sound of a loud buzzer. The skiff was stopped. Her instrument showed traces of cetacean movement just beyond a sheer shelf of metallic rock, heading slowly westward. Hikahi activated the hydrophones. Whoever you are, her voice boomed through the water. Come out at once. It was a faint query sound, a weary, confused whistle. This way, idiot! Follow my voice! Something moved out from a broad channel between islands. She snapped on the skiff's spotlights. A gray dolphin blinked back in the sharp glare. Kipiru! Hikahi gasped. The pilot's body was a mass of bruises, and one side bore a savage burn. But he smiled, nevertheless. Ah, the gentle rains, dear lady, for you to come and rescue me. The smile faded like a quenched fire, and his eyes rolled. Then, on pure instinct, His half-unconscious body rose to the surface.